P.S. I Love Hoffman is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For all things Cage Club related, head on over to cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me.
I am so pumped to talk about The Hunger Games.
Are you now?
I didn't think I'd be into this. I really didn't.
Oh, you're into it?
I am into The Hunger Games. Like, I can't wait to see who wins future Hunger Games. It's like, I don't know. I don't know what it was. It's just like, stayed away from this movie for years, or all these movies.
Well, it came out in awkward, it came out when we were no longer, like, the target audience, per se.
Fair, but I just like the world that they've built, and just, like, the fighting, and the characters, and the costumes.
And the Roman names.
The Roman names, and Lenny Kravitz, oh.
Lenny Kravitz. I love some. The only other. What other.
Two episodes in a row where you do a Jewish voice.
Yeah.
That was one of my favorite moments of last week. If you guys haven't seen last week's episode, definitely check it out. It's on Facebook Live.
Yeah, you can watch that or listen to it, obviously.
Watch or listen.
As you're listening to this.
And thank you for listening to this one. I cannot say this enough. Can't wait to talk about the Hunger Games.
I'm hungry.
Did they say let the games begin or something like?
Yeah.
Now they just kind of
may the odds forever be in your favor.
Yeah, that's what Effie says. Yeah. But it's like I can think they just like put you there and they say go or something.
It's like bam, 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 go kill one another.
I can't hear it. Yeah. That's it. That's good.
Iggy Pop, amen. Let it rock.
I'm a fucking idiot.
Red meat, we crave sustenance.
I'm an artist.
Hello, my name is Truman Capote.
Why don't you have some fun?
Fun, fun.
Tommy,
it's a painting.
Whoever she is, I'm gonna find her and I'm gonna hurt her.
I've spent the past 3 years learning Finnish.
I'm always home, I'm uncool.
This is a process of dehypnotization.
Shut up!
Good evening, Hoff fans. Welcome to this week's edition of the P.S. I Love Hoffman podcast. Our love letter to the remarkable career of the late, great Philip Seymour Hoffman. I'm Brian Rodriguez.
I'm Kyle Reinfried.
We're always home, we're always uncool, and we're always ready to watch great movies. Did you like my Effie, Kyle?
Yeah. Yes, I was very. It caught me very off guard. That was you. You hammed it up. I think you've already out hammed me for the episode.
I wasn't planning that. I just like it.
It
came out.
I
live for Effie in this series. Like this is like
my girl
right here. I'm like really into her. I didn't think I would be. I didn't think I would be.
Yeah. Well. Then you're new to this series, so I mean, not that I'm not going to claim that this is a series for me, but I have had at least I've seen the first one and parts of the part two, but we're talking Catching Fire, right? Hunger Games, the second in the series.
Yes, that is what we're talking about today, and luckily we're joined by a guest who apparently has more knowledge of the Hunger Game verse than we do.
Kara. How's it going?
Hi. It's going well. How are you?
Doing good. Thanks for coming back. We last had you on quite some time ago for, Patch Adams. So this is, you know, same kind of movie, right? Medically.
Yeah, same kind of
another,
movie.
Yeah, another film featuring rural poverty. So that's...
Oh, wow. There we go.
There is a connection.
You found a connection. Yeah. Well, job well done.
Thank you.
Yes, and that is the voice of Kara Gail O'Regan, the half, I guess, of Wistful Thinking on the Cage Club Network, and one of our good podcast buddies here. So thank you for coming on board. We definitely appreciate your presence.
Well, I'm thrilled to be here.
And may the odds ever forever be in your favor. There you go.
Thank
I don't
you.
Know.
I always forget what this is. Okay, so we're, like you mentioned, Kyle, we're jumping in on this franchise. This is like a first for us, because I don't think... I mean, yes, Mission Impossible 3 is a franchise that Philip Seymour Hoffman's in, but it's
sure,
not
Sure, but that just feels like
this.
Such a standalone movie, and we talked about it on that episode. Like, you could just watch that one, and you do not need to know a thing about that universe.
Yeah, no, this is... a very, very, very different film than what we're used to talking about or covering. And I gotta be honest with you, it was a breath of fresh air. We've been getting a lot of, like, slow, drony character pieces from Philip Seymour Hoffman's late career. You know what I'm saying? So this was something that... It was nice to watch because it's something different, if that makes sense.
Sure, but unfortunately it's not necessarily due to him. You know, it's
He's great in this, though.
He is great in it, but I mean, it's not a movie that you watch because of him.
Yeah.
You know, even these other...
I watched it because of him.
Well, okay, yes, we watched it because of him. I would not have watched Catching... I mean, I probably would have eventually in my life watched Catching Fire, but I specifically watched it for the first time because Philip Seymour Hoffman is in this, and we have a Philip Seymour Hoffman podcast. But it's... Yeah, he's not, you know... I mean, he's not the main man, but it's still... It was a very fun... I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I was going to.
Me too. So, Kara, you've seen these films or something?
I have, yes.
What is your experience, I guess, with the Hunger Games universe?
Well, I have not read the books because I'm not a big fiction reader, but I have seen all the movies, although I did watch them, I think, out of order. I started the first time I saw this movie first, I think, and had idea what was going on. It's not a standalone by any means.
No.
So I watched this one and then the next two, and then I went back and watched the first one. And then for this podcast, I accidentally watched the first one again because I didn't realize that Philip Seymour Hoffman wasn't in it until about 10 minutes before the end. So I am glad that I did, though, because I had a much better context for seeing this movie.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I watched, so like I mentioned, I had never seen any of these films. Obviously, I had heard about them. I don't know, they came out at a weird time, at least for me, that I wasn't, like, so much into these kind of films anymore, or at least I thought so. Like, but I don't know, I got into it. I did enjoy the first one. I was excited to see this one, and I liked it, and I can't wait to watch the next two. Yeah, there's two, despite Philip Seymour Hoffman... Those being his last film, so they're going to be very sad. But still.
Yeah.
Kyle, you mentioned you'd seen them before?
I've seen the first one. Like, prior to watching this for the podcast, I had seen the first one, and I had caught parts of part two. Maybe part one, because I don't... But I'm definitely, like, I know how the movie... I know how the series ends. Like, I just caught it by, like... I think from, like, the last, like, action set, like, probably the last, I don't know, 40 minutes maybe, and watched it to the end, and then maybe, like, little parts here and there in part one and beginning of part two. But definitely, like, one time I just turned on the TV, and it was during an action thing, so I was like, oh, this looks, you know, like, some cool, like, weird creatures and, like, military thing happening, so I just caught it from there and ruined the ending of the series for myself, I guess. But I remember going into...
Don't ruin it for me.
No, I'm not. I'm going to say that going into this, I said to you, like, you know, you're like, oh, like, you know, I'm probably going to watch, you know, the first Hunger Games. I'm like, eh, you know, like, you don't necessarily have to. I'm like, you could read, like, the Wikipedia page, or I even said, like, you just have to know, and I stated X amount of facts. And then when watching this, I'm like, oh, I'm so happy, Brian. That was horrible advice I just gave him. Like, he just the fact of, like... and since I haven't seen part one of Mockingjay, I don't know if his character survived. But for instance, like, the Lenny Kravitz in this movie, thank God, freaking Lenny freaking Kravitz is in this series, and that would have meant absolutely nothing if, like, you just read the...
Oh, yeah, no, I know.
You know?
No, it wouldn't have meant nothing. They still, like, beat a guy up who seemed like he was a really good fashion designer and a nice guy. But, yes, it definitely means more.
Yeah,
in a negative
way. Yes, that's what I'm sorry. I mean, it means nothing. I'm not trying to say beating up, like, of Lenny Kravitz, a black futuristic fashion designer, means nothing. But I'm just saying it just emotionally
it's more
means
personal.
Much more.
Yes, it means
yeah,
it's
exactly.
more personal.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, so, I mean, I guess to bring our Hoff fans here, it's kind of hard to recap the first one, but I don't know. This is like a post-apocalyptic world.
I mean, yeah, do either of you feel... I have a synopsis for this movie. I wasn't thinking of reading or doing a synopsis. I guess I should have maybe written one or had something prepared. Do either of you feel comfortable?
Oh, come on, Kyle. I thought you were such an expert on the first one that we didn't even need to watch it.
Well, I can tell you like the bare, like the skeleton of it, the basic premise.
Catching up to Catching Fire with Kyle Reinfried. Go.
Well, the whole thing with the Hunger Games universe. I mean, so this is Earth. Do they ever say Earth? Right. I'm assuming it's
Earth. It's Earth. It's North America. It's like a future North America.
Of like a way in the future. And so at one point there was a really big, I mean, we never learned what happened to the rest of the world, but at least I guess in the United States, or, you know, there's a big, you know, just like war between the people and the government, and then finally, you know, it's like the government wins and it just becomes a very, crazy
dystopian.
Dystopian, yes. Totalitarian kind of world where there's 12 districts,
modeled
or there,
mostly,
there was?
There was 13, actually. Originally.
There's 13,
and it's modeled on ancient Rome, with the capital being Rome. In this case, the capital, and then these like outer kind of colonies where they get different agricultural stuff and industrial stuff and that sort of thing.
I see.
But all of the wealth is centralized to the capital.
That makes sense because, like,
did you pick up on that?
Well, I was wondering why a lot of the capital characters have Roman names, including Plutarch, our guy, Philip Seymour Hoffman. So that makes sense. I read somewhere that, like, this is like after part of the world flooded, perhaps due to global warming. I'm not sure, but who knows?
Yeah. So like the land mass of North America has been reduced by rising sea levels and other like environmental catastrophes.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that would make sense with like shortage of goods. Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Come on. So I guess, I don't know, first Hunger Games, obviously this is based on a book. I mean, that's silly, if anyone. Suzanne Collins, epic series that a lot of people read. None of us here, of course, but some people did read them, I'm told. But let's see if I can sum up the first Hunger Games in my own way. Katniss, who's like Jennifer Lawrence, she's all... I don't know. What district does she live in again? Wow, I'm so
12.
Bad.
12.
12, yes. District 12. She lives in District 12, and her sister gets picked to do the Hunger Games, and she volunteers.
And the Hunger Games is?
What is the Hunger Games, really? Just like a survival...
It's pretty much to remember that the government's in charge, so every year there's these games, the Hunger Games, that a girl and a boy are chosen, and they have to fight... Like, so there's
from each 20, district.
20, and at that point, there, I mean, I know there's 13, but there's 12 at that point, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's 24 young people fighting to the death, and even, like, it's not like it's not like each person, like, even, it could come down to the two people from the same district fighting if that came to it, but then there's allegiances and all that crazy stuff.
Yeah, normally. It's like most dangerous game against everybody, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
Or even if you've ever read or seen Battle Royale, which is a
Battle Royale
thing.
Oh yeah, definitely. Wow, there's a lot of similarities.
And why am I forgetting the? It's like, I mean, it's a classic book. It's about the kids that get deserted on the island. Help me out.
Oh yeah,
Lord of the Flies.
Thank you. It's got a Lord of the Flies element to it, but obviously that wasn't by choice. They just crash land, and that's just about like. You know, popularity and all that kind of stuff. But, it, you know, just kids fighting, you know, and dying, that's in that realm, I guess.
Yeah, and I think in, like, the second movie, you don't get a sense that they're children because it's mostly adults.
Yeah.
It's basically like a PTSD All-Stars game in the second movie.
Yeah.
But, in the first movie, it's like really striking because I was just like, oh my God, these are children that they're having fight each other to the death. And it was just like really kind of upsetting.
The first movie's Hunger Game itself was more like intense to me because one, I did not know anything that was going to happen. Two, there was all these kids, especially I forgot her name, that Rue, the girl she befriends.
Yeah.
Yeah, like
very
like,
little girl.
Yeah, it's like, oh my God. Like that was, you know, that was a more intense theoretical Hunger Game. But
and like also the first movie is like almost entirely shot and like with a handheld camera. So you just get this like bouncy kind of disoriented feeling through the whole thing.
People didn't like that apparently about the first one.
I didn't like it. It made me nauseous.
Well, that's why they brought in director Francis Lawrence, who made such classics as Constantine and I Am Legend, and now the newly released with Jennifer Lawrence, Red Sparrow. But let me just tell you, he brought some professionalism to it, because this is the guy that brought us I Don't Want to Miss a Thing Aerosmith music video, people.
Oh, wow.
Brian, you should, like,
what
if you didn't, if you didn't see, you would love the amount. He has Backstreet Boy music, like, his music video credits are insane. I think that's all he did before Constantine, which came out in, I believe, 2004, 2005, with, Cage Club tie-in. So.
Yes, cageclub.me, that's cageclub.me. Anyway. So, yeah, I mean, I did not realize that this guy was, like, a hardcore music video director. He definitely
intense.
Definitely brought a larger perspective to the series. Just want to end the first one, though, Hunger Games. Jennifer Lawrence's character, Katniss, and what's the dude's name?
Pita Bread.
Pita. Yeah, Pita. I always want to say Peter, but it's Pita.
Yeah, it's Pita. Some of the names in this are, like, really stupid. The Roman thing makes more, adds a little bit more, but just like Woody Harrelson is, like, hey, Mitch. Like, he's just, it's Woody Harrelson. You think of him as, like,
I never thought of him as, hey, Mitch, though. But that's,
but that's just, like, every once in a while, in, like, a nice, like, light, you know, it's just like, oh, hey, Mitch. Like, yeah.
Pita and Katniss win the Hunger Games, and they basically, they're supposed to fight to the death to the end, but instead they, like, are going to just kill themselves by eating these berries, and they declare, like, two winners that year, and they also have this fake love thing that, so they can get sponsors and stuff, that kind of is, like, a weird tension that we'll talk about, I guess, in this film, Catching Fire, I think.
Well, something that, like, they remind you of repeatedly in the first movie, and I don't think they do it as much in the second one, is that this is a TV show. Like, these children are fighting each other to the death as a TV show.
Yeah.
You know, and so there's this.
And people can help out, too. Like, they can.
Right. Yeah. And it's just really interesting to me. I think the whole series arc of this, like, from a perspective of, like, media manipulation and propaganda and stuff, and I'm probably getting, like, way too far ahead of myself, but the kind of fake love story, like, the narrative of their love story, they have to play up to, so that they can survive, basically.
Well, it's gruesome Jersey Shore, like, you know. What was the author's name?
Suzanne Collins.
Yeah, she. I mean, she's definitely, like, making, I mean, a statement on just, like, it's like news meets reality TV. You know, it's like the E! Network, and then it's like, you know, I mean, it has that reality. It has, like, the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire lifeline. Like, people sending in little parachutes of goodies to help you out.
I think another thing the author's definitely doing here is just commenting on, like, the desensitization of society and culture. I mean, because it's not, I mean, okay, yes, this is very far off. I don't think we'd be cool with this on TV, but it's not as far off as it should be. Like, you know, like, I feel like 75 years of it, the people would be behaving just like this, if not worse. I think it's kind of tame for 75 years of it. Like, where, like, the ante kept having to be up. Like, I don't want to bring up too many current events, but this is, like, these school shootings. They happen all the time now that it's like, oh, okay. And not all of them are like, oh, okay. Thankfully, this last one in Florida seems to have woken people up. But again, they happen all the time. And it's like, I did enjoy that commentary because it is, I feel like it's very true.
Yeah, and I feel like it's actually more striking now than it was the first time that I watched it, like, a couple years ago. But the whole point of the Hunger Games is, like, to remind people of, like, the sacrifices that they have to make to live in this so-called civilized society. And I was thinking about that in that same context that you were just talking about, that, like, are these school shootings the price that we pay, you know, for what, fill in the blank, you know?
Yeah.
So it was just really interesting to watch this time around.
No, it's a weird, obviously, world that they live in, that it's not just like they're making these sacrifices, but it's a televised, you know, event. And on top of that, but then each district, like you said, like, they all have, like, you know, so what is District 12? It's like mining, kind of? Like,
that's District 12, yeah, mining. And it's probably like Appalachia, so like in West Virginia.
Yeah, the coal miner's daughter meets the...
Wait, yeah, exactly.
I thought it was weird, Kyle, because have you seen that film Winter's Bone? With Jennifer Lawrence?
Oh, yeah, that was like her first one. She was like,
yeah, like that was like her breakout role, and I think it takes place like in the... Obviously in a different timeline.
Also, yeah. Different universe, but also in Appalachia.
Yeah.
And Winter's Bone and the first Hunger Games, second movie in 2 years, where Jennifer Lawrence played a character who feeds her destitute family and herself, partly by catching and killing squirrels.
Ooh. Oh, yeah. No, there was a lot of those similarities, which I thought was, again, such different films, but but interesting.
No, she's being typecasted 100% as a squirrel hunter. And
she gets all the squirrel hunting roles.
Yeah. But and now Red Sparrow, This Is Mockingjay, now she's onto birds. There's a whole an epidemic.
She also plays the bird roles, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's how the just the long and short of it, kind of the feel of the Hunger Game universe. That's how the first one kind of ends, and basically the prize of winning the Hunger Games is like a couple things, but the biggest prize is that you survive, supposedly.
Right. And that like you and your family
are taken
kinda
care
get
of,
to move on up to the east side, yeah.
But still in your district, though.
Right.
And that's the whole thing. Like, this world, it's not like, so District 1 is the main, like, hub? Like, right, is that...
Well, the capital is, but is
the capital,
District
is capital,
1 is
district
not
one?
The capital?
Yeah, it's like Washington, D.C. that isn't technically a state, you know?
Yeah.
The capital is one thing, and then District 1 is a separate
entity. Okay. Yeah, District
1. But there's like, still, District 1's still, like, the shit, right? District 1, they're still, like, don't they have, like, professional fighters or something like that?
Yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah, like
kids that grow up training for this sort of thing, and because
like the
they
Spartans.
Volunteer, right? And because they volunteer or whatever, their families are very well rewarded with, you know, food and all sorts of other luxuries.
And this all stems from it's the first one is the 74. I don't know if they ever they must say it. I don't recall since I didn't watch it right before.
Yeah, they
this
do.
One. But they make a big point of obviously that in the Catching Fire is the 75th. But so obviously there hasn't President Snow hasn't been the president this whole time. But that's, you know, he's the big bad. So it's just something, I guess, a tradition he's carrying on. But he seems to be extra, at least, I mean, we don't know past presidents, but he seems to be extra evil and dickish, if I might say.
Yeah, well, and like Roman emperors, you know, there is like a whole string of them on like varying spectrums of evil and opulence, you know, so I think he's one of the worst guys. I was actually reading up on some of the symbolism in these movies, and President Snow has white roses a lot that he gives to people or that he's wearing. And apparently in the books, they say that the white rose has like this really overpowering scent to it that has been genetically engineered to have this really overpowering scent because he gets these like crazy mouth sores that are really stinky and disgusting. That had something to do with like poisoning his enemies, and I don't know. It was complicated. It added an interesting piece of information that I didn't have prior to watching the movie.
Yeah, that's is like, interesting.
That's, that's book complicated. You don't like get right. like nuance like that in films, I think, a lot of times. Yeah.
No, but it's great. Yeah, he's definitely like, you know, he's a tyrant, but it's why don't we go through this cast of characters? It is a pretty cool cast, and we can just go along and talk about them. Jennifer Lawrence, we mentioned, is Katniss, our hero of the story,
and heroine.
I mean, it's whatever. Josh Hutcherson is the guy who plays Peeta. Is he from anything else?
He was a child actor. He was in like things even from the Will Ferrell Kicking and Screaming. But he was in. I feel like he was in a. I can quick look up. But he's. I mean, he was just in some movies as a kid.
Like teen heartthrob kind of.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I don't know. I wasn't a big fan of him. I mean,
he's great. He's my least favorite thing about the series. Like, I mean, you're going to choose a Hutcherson over a Hemsworth? Come on. Who are we kidding?
Well, thanks for the spoiler there. But I don't, like, understand.
I can spoil it more for you, Brian. I won't, though.
Yeah, well, you could always spoil things more. But thank you. Jeez. I didn't know she chose him. He could be dead. I haven't seen the third one. That's where we leave off. So shh.
No, I was saying in this movie.
She doesn't really shoot because, like, I feel like they got a good vibe last time, in the first Hunger Games, and then like she goes back and it's just like back to normal. Who knows what Katniss wants? But that's like the least interesting thing about this film. Like that little to me, like their little kind of romance. Like I'm more about the world and like these battles than like whatever the hell they're trying to do with that. But whatever.
He's in Zathura.
Okay. Liam Hemsworth, as you mentioned, Kyle of the Hemsworth dynasty. he plays Gail, like her at home friend. Mentioned Woody Harrelson, who's Hey Mitch.
And he is so good in these movies.
Amazing.
Yeah. And he looks good with hair.
So great. Yeah.
Like, I don't know what the book character was supposed to be like, but I can't... This is the problem when you watch the movie before the book. Like, if I were to read the book now, I couldn't not see Woody Harrelson in that role. And, yeah, he's great. And he won a previous Hunger Games, right?
Yeah. And he's one of the mentors. So people who have won previous Hunger Games, not only are they, you know, get to live in these well-appointed homes with food and whatever, they also then serve as mentors to future tributes.
And in their district.
Give them advice. Right, in their district. Give them advice, give them guidance, sometimes send things to them in the game. So, yeah.
Cool, yeah. And he does an awesome job. We mentioned President Snow, the legendary Donald Sutherland.
It was so weird. Let me tell you. So, like, since we watched it, and then the other night, like, then, you know, we were going to record, but then I watched another movie, and that movie I chose was Animal House, which Donald Sutherland is in, and they, like, he gets high, and he, like, even, like, he has, like, sex with what's-her-name from the first Indiana Jones in that movie, and, like, you see, it was just such a weird, different role to watching this movie with Donald Sutherland.
Many years apart, yeah.
Yes. And didn't you, like, write something on Facebook about, like, him being Santa Claus?
Yeah, he is, like, evil Santa. You know, this is if Santa got too much power. That's how I see him.
Okay.
But, okay, let's see. Oh, Elizabeth, like I mentioned, I like Effie, Elizabeth Banks. She is, I guess she's not really a mentor, but she's like someone from the Capitol who, I don't know what her official role is, but she kind of is like an escort, right? Like she just like.
Yeah, or like a manager. She's like managing the situation with and the is it, tributes.
And is it for, is she just for district? Like for the people from District 12, because this movie
it seems that way.
Yeah, because this movie especially, they make it that much more emotional. Like before, they have to, you know.
Yeah, I actually read something quick that she in the book, like, I mean, everyone wants these positions, but you kind of have to pay your dues. And some of the younger, whatever she is, like managers, will take on the crappier districts and hoping that like later they'll get promoted to like District 1 or District 2.
Ah, so, okay.
It's like sports, you know. She's like a coach,
yeah.
And you know, her first job might not be with the best team, but maybe she'll be with, like, in her mind, you know.
She's next, almost like PR.
Yeah. And she's in these, like, fancy outfits, and it's, like, obviously, like, the Capitol's look is very, like, over the top.
And I gotta say, between the first movie and the second movie, there is a huge difference in the budget. And I would love to see, like, the breakdown of the budget for the second movie, because the, just for the eyelashes alone in the second movie, I can only imagine what that budget must have been.
Oh my god, yeah.
Everyone's got, like, really intense eyelashes, including Abby.
You get more, you see more of, like, the Capitol people in the second, like close-ups of them, and they're just, ugh. See, in
and
the first movie...
where...
Sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, in the first movie, her outfits are, like, interesting and bizarre, but, like, her makeup's so white, and it kind of looks, not cheap, but, like, kind of, you know? The second one is just, like you said, to another level of costume design.
And her costumes in particular actually were part of Alexander McQueen's collection that were lent to the costume designer.
Oh, really? So these are, like, real stuff? Wow.
Yeah.
So the budget difference between the two movies was the first one was $78 million. This one was $130,000.
Yeah.
What? I'm sorry. $130 million. Sorry.
Wow. Okay.
And actually now, like, just you saying, like, the room and then obviously the names, this one, because I wrote it down, like, when they're at that party in the Capitol, it has that Rome feel because they have the drink that then lets you, I guess, throw up the food, right? I don't think it just helps you digest it. I think it insinuated that you throw it and you get to eat more, which is so, I remember learning about, like, the Roman Empire, and I was always fascinated by, like, I think it's called the vomitorium, where people would just go, and instead of being a fountain, they would just, like, puke into an area, and then they would be able to continue partying on. So
theoretically, yes. We don't have to get into this now, but I have a lot of facts about that.
Ooh,
did some deep research into the vomitorium.
Yes.
But anyway, continue.
Wow.
Let's continue with the cast, I
deep
guess.
Dive. Okay. Well, this guy, you know, I love talking about. Oh, by the way, Donald Sutherland has been in films with Philip Seymour Hoffman, as they didn't share screen time, but they were in Cold Mountain together. Just to wrap up, yes. This guy was also in a film with Philip Seymour Hoffman. You know, he's one of my favorite. He's on my short list to ever do a podcast about, and that's Stanley Tucci.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Stanley Tucci. I love him. I love him so much.
He's so good.
Love him in this series, like, not in the way that I usually love him in other movies.
I enjoyed him more in the first one, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but I mean, like, what is his name? Caesar? Like, he is that. You know, he's the host of, not the, right, like the host of the Hunger
Games.
He's
the host of the Hunger Games, yeah.
TV show, though.
Right.
He's the Ryan Seacrest.
Commentator. He's the Johnny Weir, if I may.
Ooh,
and the Tara Lipinski to his Johnny Weir is actually Toby Jones, who played Capote in the other Capote movie that came out at the same time as Philip Seymour Hoffman's.
We get officially our two Capotes together. Apparently, Kyle, there was a cameo by Toby Jones that was uncredited in what movie?
In I can never freaking say the name of the movie. Synecdoche, New York.
I knew the movie, I just wanted you to say it. Yeah.
Thank you.
So it was good. I mean, and it's funny. It's like that classic trope where, like, the one commentator talks so much and the other guy hardly speaks. Which is weird that they use, like, a guy of Toby Jones' stature to hardly speak, but happy to see both Capotes in this film. Let's see. Oh, there's Jenna Malone, who plays Joanna Mason, a very popular character. This is a character that I read that a lot of people wanted to play.
A lot of people, a lot of young actresses, like, you know, called out to possibly get the role.
I guess she was very popular in the book. That's my only guess. She's cool.
She's got a cool axe.
And Jenna Malone's been in Cold Mountain as well with Philip Seymour Hoffman, and they did actually share a scene.
They shared a scene in that rowboat, yep.
Yep, they were on the boat together. Jeffrey Wright, another Hoffman collaborator. They did Ides of March together. And he is that...
Oh, the Westworld guy.
Westworld guy. let's see who else is on this list of notes. Oh, Lenny Kravitz.
Leonard Kravitz.
Played Cinna, the fashion designer that we mentioned before that gets beat up. And I guess Willow Shields is Primrose. That was the top listed cast. So that's pretty much.
And then there's that one other like real main character of Finnick, a new character. Sam Claflin. Just because I don't really recognize him from anything. I know that was also a role that they like some younger actors were sought after, but they ended up with Sam Claflin, and he just becomes obviously integral to this Catching Fire story.
And of course the main guy we're here to talk about kind of is Philip Seymour Hoffman as Plutarch Heavensby, the new game designer. Who was the name of the old game designer? He had another Roman name.
Seneca Crane.
Yes, Seneca Crane. I liked his name, and he had a cool beard. And just recap, if you haven't seen the first Hunger Games, he ends up having to... It's like a forced suicide after the quote-unquote debacle of Katniss winning. Because I guess I didn't mention this, like Katniss and Peeta winning kind of sparks like a revolution in... A small seeds of revolution in the outer districts, we'll put it that way. So it wasn't a very popular thing. President Snow didn't like it, we'll put it that way. So let's dive into this one then.
Shall I read the synopsis?
Yeah.
Okay.
Although Fire.
Yeah, for Catching Fire. Although Katniss and Peeta survived the 74th Hunger Games, they've been under the watchful eye of President Snow. Other districts have adopted Katniss's Mockingjay sigil that suggests an uprising is near. The president, along with the new head game maker, played by Philip Seymour Hoffman, have decided to celebrate the 75th Hunger Games with past winners back in the bloody arena. But not all is as it seems to be.
By the way, you know what's been in my head since watching these films? Like, you know, I guess it's part of the score. Or it's like the Mockingjay, like, bird sound, and then, like, the whistle. That's been in my head for days. Regardless, Philip Seymour Hoffman here. Kyle, I guess you can comment on this. Was it weird seeing him in this kind of universe, or was it... Like, what was your take in just seeing him here? I mean, obviously I think he does a great job, but...
Yeah, I mean, obviously, everything he's in, I welcome his presence, and that's the thing. He just has this presence. I mean, he's, you know, like, clean cut in this movie. He still is, you know, at this point in his career, he's definitely, heavy set, but he just has, you know, he's a very burly, you know, figure.
I would use the word gravitas.
Ooh, yes, yeah, gravitas. Yeah, well, that's gravitas. Definitely through, yeah, just his delivery. And just, yeah, it has that gravitas. And, I mean, so that's great when you have him going up in a scene pretty much... You know, his scenes are pretty much with Donald Sutherland. We meet him talking to Katniss, and there's that little... You know, and then there's obviously the ending to the movie. But most of his time is spent with Donald Sutherland as President Snow and trying to figure out how to... handle the Katniss and the possible uprising situation in all the districts. And I mean, does it also say, I mean, so we said like District 1, they live a higher life and they train. Do you think that every district, the further out, like the more poor it is? Right? Is that the general concept?
Seems like it. Okay.
So I guess our main characters live in the port. You know, so it's just like, I mean, that's then them being in the capital and her just, you know, I mean, so anyway, I mean, that's just a long-winded answer. I really enjoyed him being in this movie.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's interesting because, like, you know, gravitas for sure, but it's also, this is a weird world, right? Like, this is like, you know, weirdo beards and... crazy hair and stuff like that. And he lives in the capital. He's from the capital, I assume. But, I mean, with a name like that, I'm sure. But he doesn't, like... He brings a sense of reality and professionalism into this film. Where, like, I don't feel like... It doesn't feel like... I know it's not in space, but it doesn't feel like a space opera or something like that. He just feels like... Like, he's there because he's good at his job. Both as an actor, but also the character as well.
Okay, so we're talking about, we don't have to go in order, but of like scenes, but just did you feel, I mean, again, so I had seen like parts. I knew the ending of the series, so I guess it was spoiled for me. But just the way, like, the dialogue that he shares with Jennifer Lawrence, with Katniss, when they're like having their dance, I just felt like right away it like wasn't a big surprise, like, because it's kind of meant to be like a surprise that he like leaves, and like when President Snow is calling his name at the end, and he's gone off, and you know, there's been this whole plot to save Katniss to start an uprising, or to start a new civil war, I guess. Like, what did you guys think of that initial meeting between Katniss and Plutarch?
I mean, it definitely, I also, at least for this viewing, knew, you know, where his character arc goes. But I, like, you definitely sense that, like, there's something else going on. Like, this, and I think also his character as a game designer or whatever, like, that his, every word that comes out of his mouth is very purposeful and very designed in a way to evoke some sort of response from whomever he's speaking to. So, like, I definitely get the sense that, like, oh, there's something else going on here, but you can't quite put a finger on it yet.
Yeah, I agree with that. I wasn't, like, I mean, I kind of knew where it was going, but for me, it wasn't so much like, oh, he's definitely, you know, he's definitely on Katniss's team. It was more, I was thinking, well, whose side is he really on? And I don't know right. the ending. Like, he could betray Katniss in the end. Everyone who's seen The Hunger Games is probably laughing at me. But, like to me, like, I don't know, like, what side he's on. It's almost like how they try to portray the characters in Game of Thrones, where it's... Sometimes they could be good, sometimes they could be bad. Because then he has the whole... My thing, what I was thinking was, all right, what's his end game here? Like, I didn't know there was going to be a whole revolution at the end. I was like, who's going to... I thought Peeta was going to die, because I'm like, somebody has to win this Hunger Game. They're not going to end it the same way. That would be a very bad book and a very bad movie. But, so I figured, like, I thought Katniss was going to win. And I'm like, if he's really on her side, why is he setting up... like, all these things to kill her. But, obviously, we find out, like, why and stuff like that. So, Kyle, to answer your question, it was more, I was just... Yes, it wasn't shocked, but it was more like, oh, okay, so he is on her side, rather than being like, oh, I didn't see this coming.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a little bit... It had, like, I loved their dance had, like, a little bit of a... Bruce Wayne, Selina Kyle from The Dark Knight Rises, like, vibe to it. Just, you know, the opulence, because they were just around, like, the opulence and the people saying, like, oh, drink this so we can eat more, and all that kind of vibe. But yeah, like, at the same time, he could have been trying to get something out of Katniss so he could understand where she's coming from much more, and, you know, relaying it back to President Snow.
Yeah, exactly. Was he a previous game designer? Is that how he got this job? Because I think they mentioned that once or something like that. Or,
well, according to his character entry on Wikipedia, he's the new head game maker following the death of Seneca Crane. He's actually one of the judges who falls into a punch bowl when Katniss shoots an apple during her scoring in the first book. So in the first book/movie... before the games, they, like, evaluate each of the tributes and give them, like, a certain ranking. I don't know, for betting reasons? I'm not sure exactly. But the people who are observing her kind of have totally written her off, and they're not really paying attention. So she... and instead, they're paying attention to a whole roast pig that they've brought into their viewing room. And it has, like, an apple in its mouth. And she shoots an arrow... and hits the apple, and it gets pinned to the wall behind them. And I guess in the book, one of the people in that room falls into a punch bowl, kind of in shock, and that is Plutarch Heavensby. So he was already a part of the machine.
Must have been a big punch bowl.
Then gets promoted to head game maker.
Wow. Okay.
And she does,
I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah, and she does a badass thing, and like when they do it this time in the movie, and she just like makes a noose and holds up and paints on like a test dummy. What is it?
Seneca Crane.
Thank you. Yeah, it just like kind of does his facial hair, and I forget exactly what she writes on it, but pretty much says like, you know, how she totally got him killed. Like, you know, don't fuck up. Like, total threatening Philip Seymour Hoffman for the most part.
And this time, one of the other characters points out that they're actually behind a force field. So,
yes.
In between the last time they did this and this time, any other sort of mishaps, they've actually installed a force field between them.
She's changing a lot of things in this world, and she's our Luke Skywalker. She's our reluctant hero. Still, she's already. That's the interesting thing to me. Like, she's already, you know, like, been in the first Hunger Games, and she's already been heroic, but now, like, we start off this movie and she's having PTSD while, like, hunting, and it's just like it's not, you know, like, you're not like, oh, why is she she's sad killing other kids, like, you know, it makes sense.
Yes.
but it's, you know, but she's like, I don't want to be a symbol. She just wants to kind of run off with Gail and her mom and her sister and, like, be off the grid of the districts and just go ahead and, like, kind of, like, live life.
Yeah, I mean, I really like her character. She's a great character. It's definitely like refreshing to see a character like this. But I don't know. And this isn't nothing against her. This film compared to the first one, like, it's so much bigger that. Well, I still liked it. It's so much, I don't know. I don't even know where I'm going. I'm trying to think of, like, what I'm trying to say here, but she's great. I'll leave it at that.
Well, as Plutarch says to her, if you abandon moral judgment, it can be fun. So let's just abandon our moral judgment.
No, but she, it's great to see, like, I get why all these characters are pissed. I mean, okay, so we alluded to it. This is the 75th one. What do they call it? The quarter quell.
Quell.
Yes. So it has to be special. It has to be big. It does remind me of, like, very reality show stuff here.
And
the All Star. Weren't Kyle? Side note: weren't you a fan of a Survivor All Stars as a kid?
Yes, that was. Rupert.
okay. Yeah.
Didn't we talk about this on another episode? I feel
probably,
like it came up
probably. Yeah. So it's this all-star match, and I think in the other Hunger Games, again, I've only seen one, that wasn't the 75th, but I think in the other Hunger Games, everyone's like, except for like those District 1 and 2, there's like just the shock of being there and then the survival. This is like such the professional games. I was actually kind of surprised that all the people selected were still in, like, good shape. Not all of them, because there's that old lady and stuff, but, like, she was still probably in good shape for an old lady. I could imagine, look, this, I'll put myself in these shoes. If I somehow won the Hunger Games, and I didn't think, and I thought I was taken care of, and I didn't think I would have to Hunger Game it up again, I am... Maybe not, again, I wish I could be a revolutionary. Maybe I would be that. But if I wasn't going to be a revolutionary, I probably would, like, eat all that great capital food. I'm not sure if I would vomit
it. Oh, yeah.
And I would just party it up, and I would probably be eating and drinking and having a good time. And I don't, like, know if I would be in shape for a randomly called Hunger Games, despite that training thing, you know? You didn't see anyone with, like, a gut, like, or just...
I'd be the same way, but I don't think that someone with, like, with our shared... disposition on, like, what we would do would be the people to win the Hunger Games anyway.
Fair. That's fair.
Fair point. I think to a certain extent, though, you do see, like, Haymitch is a raging alcoholic.
Oh, true.
The girl that the older woman volunteers for is clearly, like, just an emotional wreck. Yeah, she's just straight up broken. Two of the returning tributes, the ones that are really good at camouflage, and that's how they survive, they're drug addicts. So, like, it's... And, I mean, you know...
And the other ones are psychopaths that want to just keep killing. Like,
right. And panic attacks and nightmares, like, burn a lot of calories. So
that's good.
Heavy, you know what I mean? R-E-M. Like, there's...
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a certain amount of, like, because PTSD like puts your body in this state of like thinking that it's constantly being re-traumatized. And so like to a certain extent, like your body is still kind of like ready at all times for like the next time something is trying to kill you. But like not everyone in this pool of people is necessarily like in the kind of shape to win the Hunger Games, if you know what I mean.
So is that like a new diet, PTSD?
I personally do not recommend hypervigilance as a diet plan. It's not fun.
No, I can't imagine it would be. So okay, you kind of sold me, though, on like these people's emotional states. And Kyle, not everyone wins by being a kick-ass like killer.
Mm-hmm.
Some people win by hiding.
They have their wit, and they have like their like the one guy our one guy electrocute right?
Guy. Yeah,
electrocutes a but like it's kind of silly. Like so, he won like his Hunger Games. That's the wait, why am I blanking on his name? We just said him. Jeffrey Wright's character beat. What is it? BT?
BV, something like that. I don't know.
So, but it's just kind of funny that, like, so he won his Hunger Games by electrocuting a lot of the, like, the last, like, I don't know, 5 to 8 people alive. In this movie, he's just like, so we're going to electrocute people. Like, it's just like the weakness, like, that's where, I mean, it happens. It happens in these kind of movies with when a bunch of people have to get killed off. Like, we get our little moments that they, at the end of the day, we see what faces, and we're just like, oh, okay, that person's, and the smart people are just like, okay, 8 people have died, so that means that there's 16 people left, all that. I mean, in recent movies, like the newer Aliens, like, I don't like them as much because you just have these sprawling casts, and you forget who dies, and you're not as attached to them. But, like, in this movie, they show there's that one, like, black woman that made her teeth into sharp edges so she can bite at like a neck, and I'm like, ooh, we're gonna get like a biting like of the neck and really violent, and all of a sudden like I don't even recall seeing her die in this movie.
Yeah, like, I don't either.
Yeah,
and then like the two, the brother and sister,
opportunity.
The yes. Brother and sister that are badass. Well, I said that to Brian one time, that like when I like I understand who these movies are for, and the, like and or the books are for, and then obviously from the books these are, you know, like tend to be for like the, you know, like what is that called? I said tweens, but you said a better. What's the demographic? What's that called?
Young adult.
Yeah, young adult novels. Thank you. So. You know, you just hear the idea of, like, kids, you know, like a battle royale, but, like, kids fighting to the death. I'm like, oh, this movie, could, you know, it could, it, point being, a movie like this could go in a total different direction as far as, you know, obviously it could be R, given given the plot and what, you know, what happens in the movie.
Maybe the first director would have wanted more of that, but I think they wanted to take, especially this one, and I'm sure the next one's into more of a... franchise direction rather than a gritty direction. But before I forget, I want to mention, because we keep asking it, like what every district is known for, and I'll go through it quick. District 1, they make luxury goods for the capital. District 2 is masonry and the manufacturing of weapons. District 3 is electronics. I guess that's where those people come from. District 4,
yeah, Jeffrey Wright's from. Probably.
Yeah, District 4 is fishing. Okay. District five is energy and power. District 6 is transportation. How do you make transportation? I guess they make like...
Well, you could like make buses and trains. And
okay, like the heavy. Train, yeah, okay. I see.
Seems like trains are the, you know, the go-to.
True.
Districts, obviously.
District 7 is lumber. That's Joanna's district, I think. Yeah. Because she has the axe. District.
She's the axe.
And she's a tree.
Oh, yes. She is a tree.
I wouldn't get it.
District 8 is textiles. District 9 is grain.
In South Africa and Aliens, right?
What?
That's a joke. It's a movie called District 9.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, I like that movie.
I had moved on to 10, so that's why I was confused. Yes. District 9 is grain. District 10 is livestock. District 11, agriculture. District 12, as we know, coal, and District 13, I'm not supposed to know yet.
What?
Wait, but what's...
Okay.
What's like, Rue's district?
That's what I was just going to say. What's, like, the district that seems to be pretty much all black people?
So like, that, it's very, I think, segregated. It's District 11.
Okay.
And in the first movie, after Rue dies, there's actually, you see a riot there.
Yeah, there's a, yeah.
That segment, fun fact, actually directed by second unit director, none other than Mr. Steven Soderbergh. So, a little Cinemakers connection there.
Yeah, oh, really?
Isn't that wild? Yeah, second unit director.
That's crazy.
They should have. They should have covered that for Cinemakers. Maybe they will.
Oh my God! I did not know that.
So you see the riot happen there in District 11, which I'm assuming is probably like the Deep South, or like the analog in our United States would be the Deep South. And then, so in this movie, Catching Fire, once they go through that district on the train and they stop there to make a speech, you see that that district has now been like heavily militarized. Like, there's Humvees all along the train tracks. There's troops everywhere. And it wasn't like that before in the first movie. So you see the kind of reaction to that reaction is, like, a heavily militarized presence.
Yeah, I mean, that's, like, that's one of the scenes I enjoyed more in this film. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, not that I enjoyed what was happening, obviously, but it's... It was, especially from watching the first one, it was cool to see, like, that reaction, and that, again, the revolution is coming, which is, it's exciting.
Yeah, because it is this slow build over the course of the first two movies, and I think they execute that really well.
I just went on to IMDb to try to see if there was, like, a connection between the first director, Gary Ross, and Steve Soderbergh, but I don't see one that at least, like, rings a bell to me. But Brian, I just know you would enjoy his writing credits. It's Big, Mr. Baseball, Pleasantville, nice. Seabiscuit.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah.
Toby Maguire guy, this guy? Like,
I guess, yeah.
That's funny. Okay, so, I mean, is there any... I mean, obviously there's plenty of scenes you want to talk about, but what are the scenes you might want to talk about?
Well, we talked about it, and I mentioned that first scene with Plutarch and Katniss. Do we want to play that clip, maybe, or?
Oh yeah, we kind of talked about it, but let's play the clip anyway.
So how do you like the party?
It's a little overwhelming.
It's appalling. Still, if you abandon your moral judgment, it can be fun.
So are you having fun?
I'm the head game maker. Fun is my job.
But that was what happened to Seneca Crane. Too much fun.
Seneca decided to quit breathing.
Decided.
Is that or poison berries? Being head game maker has never been the most secure job in the world.
Then why are you here?
Same reason as you. I volunteered.
Why?
Ambition. A chance to make the games mean something.
The games don't mean anything. They only mean to scare us.
Well, maybe it was you who inspired me to come back.
Ah, the presidential welcome. I'm sure we'll meet again.
Katniss, come. The president awaits.
Plutarch is introduced to us, and he asked Katniss to have this dance. And as I said before, he has that great line of, "If you abandon moral judgment, it can be fun." But he does seem kind of against this extravagance that of the Capitol. But we don't know his true allegiances. So I mean, it's a fun role for him to play. I mean, we know that that Philip Seymour Hoffman, has kids, so maybe he was also thinking on making a movie that they'll get to, I think they were still young, but a movie they could see someday, you know. I think it's just kind of just like a fun role to take. You know, he was just a guy that liked to take different roles, and so.
Has he done any sort of, like, speculative fiction, sci-fi stuff before this?
No. I mean, this is, like, not sci-fi. Again, like, so Mission Impossible is his only other big, okay. Like, Mission Impossible and then Back on the Day, Twister are his, compared to this, are his next.
Yes, like, I suppose Twister's like weather sci-fi, but I don't know.
Weather sci-fi.
I don't know if it's in this realm. So there are two, there's a couple, like, theories about why he did Hunger Games. Like, some are just, like, pure speculation on terms, like, the most negative ones I've heard are, like, he was deep in his heroin habit.
And wanted money.
And yeah, I mean, we had heard from, like, even people who knew him that he was always resistant to taking these big money films. And so it is weird that he would take it. But again, he does a good job. It doesn't seem like he's mailing it in. Jeffrey Wright, though, who was a friend of his from theater, and again, they were in Ides of March together, said that when they both got these roles, neither of them had read the book, but both of them really, like, did a deep dive and read all the books and were, like, really curious. And he says that he was, once he had read the book, he was so into the world of it and, like, how, like, the underlying revolutionary themes of it, that he started to get really into it, and he was super excited to shoot this film and just finish the entire series. So I don't know why he signed on originally, because it is out of his character from what we've seen before, but he definitely, from all accounts, took it super seriously, like, researched and took his time with the role, and I think it shows.
Well, Jennifer Lawrence even was hesitant to take the role for the first film because she was worried it was going to, like, ruin her indie cred.
And then she goes on and takes X-Men, and then...
Right.
That is a good point.
She got over that. That.
Like, I feel like there's even, like, another... What else is she... I feel like, I don't know, she's just taken...
She's been in the highest paid woman in Hollywood now.
She's been... I don't know, it seemed like for a while, it could just be... It's not like I'm reading the articles, but, like, it's just like, oh, is she no longer, like... You know, like, she was, almost, like, the new America's sweetheart, but then she seemed to be, I don't know, fall out of the graces of people, but... I want to see the Red Sparrow movie. It seems interesting. It seems like, I mean, they've said, like, oh, that would have been a good Black Widow, like, Marvel movie, but, obviously, I mean, I enjoyed her from Winter's Bone, and, she won for, Silver Linings Playbook, right? That was what she won Best Actress for, I think. American Hustle, but yeah, Hunger Games and as Mystique in, like, the, I guess, three X-Men movies now have been her blockbuster roles.
Interesting. I had not heard of Red Sparrow before, and I just read a synopsis, and I'm really looking forward to seeing it. Sounds cool.
Yeah, it looks pretty cool.
I love
cool.
A ballet movie.
Yeah, and she was Mother that I still really want to see.
I haven't seen Mother.
Aronofsky.
One thing that, like, Jennifer Lawrence's most Jennifer Lawrence moment in this film is that, like, kind of weird elevator scene with Joanna where she just, like, takes her tree dress off.
Oh, God. Which apparently they didn't, like, close
the area.
They
shot down a real... Yeah.
They, like, people were, like, trying to get on the elevator while they were shooting this, and she was naked. Like,
what?
That made me so upset. Because that's why you protect your actress that way. You know, that's, like, it's such a vulnerable... I'm not okay with that.
It was some elevator that they liked in, like, a hotel. Yeah, that was very futuristic looking. I forget what city it was. Like, it felt like a random city that I'm like...
Somewhere in Georgia.
Yeah.
But why? That's, like, ridiculous. Oh, my God.
I know, right?
Well, that anyway, the face that Jennifer Lawrence has when, like, she turns around and, like, whatever, is not a Katniss face. That is, like, That is a classic, like, Jennifer Lawrence face. Which I'm, whatever. Was this scene in the book, though?
The elevator scene? Yeah, I think so. Yeah, if it wasn't in the book and they, like, shoehorned in there, then I would be so much more upset about it.
Yeah, okay. That's because, like, you...
Completely
exactly.
Necessary.
Took the words out of my mouth, you know? Because if that's not in the book and they just put it there and then they did the whole... Now that I know that whole thing with the elevator thing, then it's like, what is going on?
Well, in your opinion, what is... Jenna Malone's character, what is she trying to do there with now knowing that she was one of the, I mean, you know, we learn in the end X amount of people that were participating in these Hunger Games were in on the idea of, like, we gotta save Katniss and get her out so we can start this like rebellion. Like, I guess the only people were those last people, like the real like beefy people that were like, you know, wanting to kill, you know, the brother and sister that die, and then sharp tooth woman and that one other like jacked guy.
Well, I don't know like at what point those people were recruited to help.
Oh,
so I don't know if
okay.
this was like before or after she was recruited, because to me mm-hmm. that scene reads as like her just trying to intimidate them.
Okay.
You know, just showing them like, I'm fearless, I don't give a fuck, you know?
And she doesn't towards like anybody. She's very like, for that world, outspoken and like, you know, like, I mean, looking up at cameras and saying stuff about snow.
She's the only one who's like, excuse me, like, I thought, like, you know, like, we did this thing, we won, we're supposed to be safe now, and now you're, you know, pulling the rug out from under us, like, this is bullshit.
Yeah. So, on, like, a story level, Kyle, my theory on that scene, I think it's, the only thing it could be intimidation, but if she does know at that point, it's clearly to try to forward this PETA Katniss thing, you know, like, oh, is
okay.
he gonna?
I see.
Is he gonna be into Joanne? Like, I'm not saying that's good writing. I'm saying it's like, oh, did you see like Katniss was like, a little jealous in that scene, or like, I don't trust her, but like, you know, if that's the case, that's a little weak. But that's I think.
Yeah.
You know, because
but
he's
yeah,
like,
at that point, maybe she wasn't totally recruited yet.
I don't know. Again, with PETA, like if he dies or if he died at any point, like I feel bad for Katniss if Katniss feels bad, but I don't really care. Like, I'll be honest, like he's
really strong. He can make a good loaf of bread, but besides that.
Are they supposed to play him like that? The other guy, like the Hemsworth guy, is like the like hot one, and he's like the dork who's like, you know, like that trope who's like.
I find his character really interesting because something that I pick up on a lot in the vast majority of movies is that women characters are very often used as a plot device. Like, they're not really fleshed out as human beings. They don't have, you know, inner lives of their own. They're really just there to kind of move the plot forward. And I kind of feel that way about PETA in this series. That like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, technically
that's a good
he's a main
really
character,
good point. Yeah.
But he's just a plot device, you know? And it's just like a little weak for me.
Yeah, no, that's definitely interesting as far as, you know, like the gender, like reversals, like you just said. But I mean, I don't know if that was like a choice or if that just happens. And like, now you're having me think towards other strong, like, I guess one could kind of argue that for the role of Chris Pine in Wonder Woman, you know, mm-hmm. like, I mean, he has a little bit more than PETA, I think, knowing like the stuff that happens in this series and then knowing what happens in Wonder Woman. But I wonder if that's just what happens when you flip who is the lead in the movie, or if that was just like what happened.
Well, to me, it's like two wrongs don't make a right. Like but it's like a good education for people who don't normally see that in like the women characters.
Yes. Like,
you know, it's like it's a good teaching lesson, but it's still like, he's just fucking boring.
if someone says like, oh, and PETA wasn't fleshed out at all, it's like, okay, well, watch plenty other movies where female characters like that would be that would be like a perfect like for an ignorant like reviewer or whatever.
Watch literally any other movie.
Yeah,
and you'll see it happen to a woman.
And speaking of that, did we mention that this is like the highest grossing, this particular film as well, like it's the highest grossing like female, I guess, led film since The Sound of Music adjusted?
Yeah, something crazy like that, right? And then,
this was the number one movie of the year, and there hadn't been a number one movie of the year that was led primarily by a female since The Sound of Music, which is crazy.
Yeah, it's like, and Sound of Music is like 1964, I don't know, 8, I don't know, something like that.
And 2017, for all of its faults, had the three top grossing films were led by women.
Yes.
So that's cool.
So, I mean, one could say that this, you know, ushered in an era of that. I don't know if Perhaps. Everyone would say that, but one in the history book could point at this.
And
film.
Not just that. I don't know if this is something that you guys notice, but in addition to women being used as plot devices in film, sexual assault is very often also used as a plot device for how a woman experiences a transformation or becomes a stronger person or whatever. She experiences this trauma and then, you know, this causes her to rise from the ashes or some bullshit like that. And then these movies, you see a woman experience trauma over and over and over again, and she doesn't even get raped once. How about that?
Which is,
weirdly exciting.
No, it's not. And we've actually, Kyle, have been talking about this a lot because we've been seeing it a lot recently.
Yeah, because and don't get me wrong, sexual assault and rape are extremely common. So, it's not surprising to me that it winds up in on screen a lot. But the way that it's used as a plot device and not as, something that should be taken seriously, it bothers me a lot.
Yeah, we were citing your previous episode as the first time, and it's not a rape in that film, but it's when I don't remember in Patch Adams the girl's name when she just is stupidly murdered by that guy.
Yeah,
it was just horribly besides that just being a bad writing.
Just talk about bad writing.
Yeah, talk about bad writing, but then on top of it, just shot horror, executed in every way. It was executed horribly. And then on top of it, it's just a very cliche thing to happen. But I mean, we talked about that with Joanna on the Jacko's Boating episode. We talked about that with Ides of March. There's been these films lately.
Yeah,
not lately, just throughout the entire history of film.
I'm saying lately on our podcast.
Yeah, especially lately. I think they've occurred throughout, and maybe we're more aware now. But again, especially lately.
And once you see it, you can't unsee it. And because I have been watching movies my whole life and didn't really notice this until a couple years ago. And now every time I watch something, I'm what the fuck again? Seriously? It's really ridiculous.
Oh yeah. No, I mean, but you're right. There's none of that here. Yes, there's violence, but it never feels like there's purposeful violence against women, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Jennifer Lawrence is obviously a woman, but there's not.
It's not gendered violence.
Yeah.
I guess the closest you get to is just the awkwardness between the meeting of Snow and her in the beginning of the movie. Mm-hmm. And since she's still not sure, you know, she's not I am taking the lead, you know, I don't know, has decided her role in this world of obviously being starting the Civil War uprising, whatever you want to call it. So there's a bit of and just even the flower that he leaves there, there's a bit, but you know, I mean, it doesn't,
but he's a flower leaver, we know this now. He just leaves flowers because he's his store.
Yeah, and not just the roses, flowers play a huge role throughout this series. A lot of the character names come from different flora and stuff like that. Did some deep reading on the flowers in this movie.
It's like adaptation.
Do flowers feature heavily in that? I don't think I've seen it.
Oh yeah. Well,
okay. You've never seen it. Oh boy.
because what is it?
The ghost.
That's the main. Yeah, but that's the main. What's it called? Either Charlie Kaufman or Donald Kaufman says, has there ever really been a movie written about flowers? it's a huge line in the film. So what other Hoffman stuff do you want to discuss, I guess? Plutarch things before we get to our big ending. Unless it is the big ending.
No, I mean, so him and Snow. So Snow really wants, just Katniss to be killed. But so again, this is the moment you're just oh, so I don't think he's totally Plutarch is totally on the president's side. And but then they kind of come up they want to destroy her image. That's more his idea. Cause some fear, but also destroy her image. So and show her as I guess living the high life at this point, and then just loving killing people in the Hunger Games, maybe. Mm-hmm. But they come up, what is it called? It's called, like, a wrinkle, and that's what they come up with, you know. That's where they come up with the idea for this 75th anniversary that has all these two people from, and it's really interesting. So in, like, they don't show the other districts when they're, except for maybe the one where the old lady and that Finnick come from, but in District 12, the only three winners have been, so it's like Katniss, I think that's like an important thing to mention. Katniss is the only woman option from District 12.
Because Haymitch actually gets picked first, and then PETA volunteers for him.
Which is, it would have been the opposite, right? Like, he was said he was going to go if PETA was picked. Because after you can't, you know, like, I guess he could have volunteered first, though. That's what I don't understand. Maybe that's not allowed. Because remember she cuts the deal with him? Like, he would volunteer if PETA's picked. And then he's picked, so PETA volunteers. But why couldn't he just volunteer before the process? Unless they just don't allow that. I'm assuming they just don't allow that.
Yeah, they don't allow that. I get that's what I assume. I don't know the...
There must... what's kind of, like, convenient is how there's, like, two living members, at least, of each gender in every region. Like, I mean, I know from sports, there are teams that haven't won the Super Bowl or the World Series in 75 years. I'm surprised
that's a good point.
That every district has had at least one winner of either male or female gender.
Yeah, you would think District 1 would be like, just have this totally, you know.
I mean, yeah, I'd be disappointed if I'm District 1 if I hadn't rattled off like 10, 20 Hunger Games championships, because, I mean, they practice for this and it seems like evenly distributed. But whatever, again, nitpicking.
I made a non-exhaustive list of ways to die in the Hunger Games if you need a reminder.
Please.
Okay, so you can die of dehydration, from hypothermia, from drowning, infection, poison fog. In the first movie, there are hornets that, like, sting you to death.
Yeah.
You can get eaten, you can get murdered in all sorts of ways, stabbed, hit by an arrow, get an axe to the face, you can get blown up, you can get electrocuted, you can fall and hit your head and or break your neck, poison berries from the first movie, and then there's always death by Capitol guards. So if you were in the Hunger Games, how would you die?
I think mostly I would try the whole, like, keep to the outer perimeter. I think it would be one of those elements that...
Kyle, that wasn't the question. It wasn't how would you survive.
I'm not saying that's how I'd be trying to survive. So it'd be like an outer element, and then I'd be taking a nap and poison gas would get me or something like that, I think.
Mm. That's how you would die in the Hunger Games.
Probably,
please.
Yeah.
I would sprain my ankle in the first minute and a half and then either die of dehydration or murder. So that sounds viable.
So Brian, how would you go?
How would I? Let's be honest. Again, most of us are just going to die in this initial scrum. I mean,
exactly. Like, just trying to run away and someone throws a spear at me before, or whatever. Like, in this case, you had to be good at running on stones away from the cornucopia or swimming or something like that.
Madge, or whatever her name was, like, her death was... I feel like that smoke was created so she could die peacefully in this film, and it wasn't like... Mm. You know, crazy, and I guess that's like the easiest way to die. But no, I mean, look, I if I'm in there and I'm playing the game, I get competitive with games. I'll probably die from a fight that I won't win. You know, like, it's just like that's just me. I'm a competitive guy. I'm gonna try to play to win. Or, well,
good for you.
Yeah, but
I
you
think
don't.
The three
but,
of us but, are the only but, one but, who actually but, gets the Hunger Games part.
But play to win doesn't always mean like just like sheer like I'm gonna physically go after my way like our Jeffrey Wright character.
No, you're right. Actually, you know, you're right. Like, if we're gonna talk about how would we try to survive, then I would try to.
Like, you're a schemer. You're a little finger. I know you. Like, you're definitely. We didn't take this into consideration. I know exactly, or not exactly what you do, but the whole scheming and alliances beforehand, you would be king of the, like, manipulation.
Oh, of course. I'll put it this way. If I'm winning the Hunger Games, I would have won the Hunger Games before that shit even started.
Yeah.
Okay.
Me, I'd be like, I don't like the way that guy looked at me. I don't want to be friends with him. Fuck him. And then he would kill me. Like, that would be...
I would seriously, like... Yeah, no, that would be my game. It would be playing politics at the beginning, and hopefully all the chips fall where they may. But it's hard because you could make an alliance, and all your whole team could die in that initial scrum. Like so, mm-hmm. so
that have, or obviously still towards the end, and that's like there's like that back and forth towards the end. Like they have these teammates, but then all of a sudden like they're nervous, and she wants to go off with PETA, but then she's supposed to go off with. I think Joanna or something like that, right? And then they're nervous towards the end because if they kill all those people, one of them then has to kill somebody else. And you know,
So to answer your question, I would probably end up dying by someone like the equivalent of like fragging, like you know, like my my teammates would realize the ruse I had, like the the resentment that I was like sowing between them. And
yeah.
then
so little, so they little
would,
fingers.
You mean to say that yeah. they would remember who the real enemy is?
Yes,
exactly. So spoiler.
Because no, because I don't like killing. I'm not a violent person, so I would definitely have like have other people do the bidding for me, you know, mm-hmm. until yeah. like there gets to a point. You know, that's how I would play the game. Okay, I'll just put it that way. So, are there any clips from that last scene, though, when he's all talking in the ship?
Well, he says, the mission was always you.
Yeah, the mission was always, yeah. The mission was always you.
I'm sure we could find that. Let's play that, because that's like our big ending.
Sure, the big reveal ending.
Where's PETA?
Candace, you have been our mission from the beginning.
The plan was always to get you out.
Half the tributes were in on it. This is the revolution. And you are the Mockingjay. And we're on our way to District 13 right now.
13?
13, yes.
Where's PETA?
He still has his tracker in his arm. Joanna cut yours out.
Where is he?
In the Capitol. They got him and Joanna.
Yes! Son of a bitch! You promised me that you would save him over me! You promised me! You're a liar! You're a liar!
So, yeah, I mean, this movie ends, interestingly, like you said, the ship kind of rescues almost all the survivors.
Yeah, PETA and Joanna have been captured and they're in the Capitol.
Yes, and from promo photos I've seen of the third film, they seem to have cleaned up. The Capitals clean them up, but I don't want to know. Don't tell me. But so they're
propaganda.
It seems yes, I'm pretty sure it is propaganda. But yeah, I mean, he was a good guy all along, I guess.
The very opening shot of the movie is actually filmed in my hometown of Ringwood, New Jersey.
Oh, I forgot they filmed it up there. Yeah.
Yeah, she's like looking out over Ramapo Lake.
I didn't know that.
Alma Mater.
Yeah, this movie was 2013. I remember people. Like,
I mean, it makes no sense that they shot there because the rest of the movie was shot in Georgia and Hawaii. So, like, I don't understand why they were like in New Jersey for a few days, but they were.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting.
Nicole, I remember we talked about this at the time. Now that it's brought up, and apparently they wanted like different trees. But mm-hmm. that still doesn't make sense.
We do have lovely trees in northern New Jersey.
It's true. And
the
actually,
foliage is always
if you ever get a chance, that hike on Ramapo Mountain is beautiful. It's really good.
Yeah, I've done it, and it's quite lovely, and you get to see the New York skyline, the Big Apple. Mm-hmm. So.
And there's this weird old burned-out mansion up there that looks like a castle.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Another fun New Jersey fact, actresses Lynn Cohen, who played Mags, and Stephanie Lee Schlund, who played one of like the career people, they promoted the DVD and Blu-ray releases of the film with an appearance at the March 7th, 2014 midnight release of the product at the Walmart in Secaucus, New Jersey.
What?
Yeah. Secaucus.
For some reason, that was in the Wikipedia article.
Wait.
But...
Even like the older lady you're saying?
Yeah.
She's like an accomplished person. Like, she's in stuff.
She is. She's amazing. And she never gets speaking parts. Like, she literally doesn't speak at all in this movie.
No.
She was on Sex and the City, and she played, like, a housekeeper. She always gets these really terrible parts, but she's an amazing actress.
Kyle, she's in Munich. She plays Golda Meir, the Prime Minister of Israel, where she does speak. But she doesn't need to be at a Walmart when the DVD comes out. Aw, that makes me feel bad.
Yeah, isn't that awful?
That's terrible.
That's pretty rough. Yeah.
Wow.
Not just a Walmart, but a Walmart in Secaucus, of all places.
Oh, man. Wow.
Yeah, I know. I now live in Hudson County. Take it easy on Hudson County.
No, Hudson County is fine. It's just Secaucus.
It's a junction.
It truly is a junction.
Back to the Hoffman thing. What I was going to say, though, is that he doesn't have, like, now that we talk about it, he doesn't have that many, like, scenes in this film.
No, he doesn't, and that's why it's understandable that you were watching that first one and, like, got to the last 10 minutes and went, oh, yeah, he's not in it. So, and I have not, so Brian, you did not continue on, right, because we've got some films in between now and then, but I haven't seen part one of Mockingjay. Carrie, you have.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's famously in part two, but then digitized into it because of his death.
Well, we'll see. Apparently they've divided scenes up. Like, there are scenes that were going to be in one that they put in two.
Oh, okay.
Apparently, but
yeah,
I can't wait to talk
apparently,
about that.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Well, I think they shot it, like, all as one movie and then cut it up into two, right?
Yeah. So,
I think so. Yeah, I think
so. No, they
so.
Did. So, again, like, so they were able to kind of restructure plot stuff to put, like, mm-hmm. to even out his performances so it's not weird. But, again, I guess we will determine that and see. Anything else in this film that's worth mentioning besides sad Walmart stories and that is sad?
No, I mean, no, I just, I guess I'll go to the Secaucus Walmart for future DVD releases.
Yeah, we have to check that out.
Hopefully meet some amazing actresses that, for some reason, decided to go there.
Oh, man, it makes me so sad. I guess the one other note I had was, I feel like the Hunger Games kind of brought this, like, I don't know what the genre is called, but, like, a newer, like, younger
the
adventure.
Young adult kind of stuff, yeah.
But genre, like sci-fi-ish things? Like, because it's that, like, is it Divergent? Is one of
Divergent,
them?
Divergent, Maze Runner.
Those were the two I wrote down, yeah. So,
yeah.
And, like, all those series, so it's clearly influential.
Twilight's part of that, right? I know
yeah.
It's not sci-fi, but it's definitely, like...
Well, it's all, like, under the umbrella of speculative fiction, so it's all that kind of, like...
Okay, so then I guess Twilight
stuff.
Was before this, so... yeah, so that ruins my theory, but it is... Yeah, no. I'll tell you what, this is probably a genre I have the least experience with watching.
Yeah, well, like you said, I mean, we just weren't at that in when did the first one came out in, I think, 2011 or 2010 or something like that point. You know, we were already out of college by then. It's not, you know, we weren't their target audience, so definitely why I didn't see it right away.
But I kind of regret that, because I kind of would have, like, I wish I saw it so that I could, like, well, I don't know if I regret it, because then I wouldn't have the experience I'm having now, so... Zero regrets.
Yeah.
I take that
I
back.
I had, like, written it off as, like... Because the people that I knew that were really into The Hunger Games were people that were, like, really into Twilight, and I was really not into Twilight. Although, to be fair, I haven't really given it a chance. Maybe it's great.
You don't know yet.
But I was just kind of like, oh, so that's, like, also probably pretty stupid. And I didn't many years, and... It turns out it's actually really fantastic.
Yeah, I agree with that sentiment, because, like, I think that's definitely what I remember the people who were into Hunger Games. You're right, it was the Twilight crowd, like the books especially and stuff. Like,
yeah,
it felt like, oh, I read the Twilight series. What should I read next? And people would just be like, Hunger Games. So, like, those kind of people. And I don't know, it made a lot of money, so clearly not everyone thinks like us, but I feel like we were probably in that age where, like, it's like, well, I don't want to do what that person does in terms
right.
of Twilight stuff, especially.
It's popular.
I've still never seen like any of the Twilights in full, but I know that, I mean, Brian, I know we both enjoy him, but Michael Sheen's in it, so I want to give it a chance for him.
I do like Michael Sheen.
We do like Michael Sheen.
I love What's-Her-Face. The one who's like in it.
Kristen Stewart?
Yeah, her. I like her a lot.
Only thing I liked her in was the Runaways. Her and like Dakota. She played Joan
Jett. Yeah, she was really good in that. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think she's really underrated. I think she's poorly cast a lot of times. And I think she's poorly utilized, but she's really pretty and I like her.
So if that's all we got to say, then that's fine by me. I think we covered this Catching Fire. I bet you Hunger Games fans, if they listen to this, they're going to be like, what? You guys suck. Like, what is... like book readers and stuff. But, like, I think fans of the network, you know, I think we did a good job. So...
Yes. I had fun. I had fun discussing a movie
guys,
that's about children
fighting.
Did we catch
the fire?
Wow.
Well, maybe after editing, Kyle. We'll see. I don't know.
Maybe after editing.
I feel like we had a good attempt on catching as much fire as we possibly could.
Well, this at best, at the least, I think was The Last Jedi, that we were the spark to start, you know, like the fire to start the rebellion. So,
yeah, I mean, I can't wait to see where this goes next. By the way, I always mention this; I didn't want to forget it. This is Kyle. We have an equal Rotten Tomatoes ranking, so both the same.
One totally equal. Wow.
Audience and the tomato meter were equal. 89%. Which,
wow.
What I see here is the highest rated of the Hunger Games films, but they all are in the, in like a 5-point margin. And I think that's like a margin of error.
Wow.
Kind of thing, so, okay. So, yeah. I mean, what do we have next week, Kyle?
We have God's Pocket, which we're going to have for the last time. Joey and Michael Manzi, the co-creators of the reason that we have podcasts, or the network.
All the podcasts in the world, podcasts. Yes.
Yeah, they invented podcasts, yeah.
They brought podcasting into the universe.
The gods of our podcast will speak on God's Pocket.
Yeah, which is definitely a departure from this film. So thank you so much, Kara, for coming on. Anything cool happening in your podcasting world, or Wistful Thinking?
We just wrapped a 3-episode series of Wistful Thinking where we did some movies about with a winter sports theme to coincide with the Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang, Korea.
Nice.
So that was really fun. We talked about The Cutting Edge. We talked about Ice Princess starring Michelle Trachtenberg, where she uses the power of physics and figure skating to overcome class inequality. And then the third episode that we did was about Mighty Ducks, and The Hunger Games actually comes up a few times in that episode. So,
we'll have to check it out.
Definitely check that out.
Yeah, check it out. We'll check it out. Hoff fans, check it out.
And my other podcast, In Sickness and in Health, about chronic illness, disability, healthcare, mortality, the fun stuff, that I recently got up and running again. So you can find that at insicknesspod.com.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Cool. Thanks so much. We'll definitely check those out. And au revoir, I suppose. Or what do they say? Is there an ending Hunger Games thing they say? Do they say, like, you've won the Hunger Games?
I'm holding up three.
Congratulations,
right,
you
now.
Didn't die.
Essentially. Yay. You win.
Yeah. Woo. We won't be getting you a nice house, though. And
sorry.
So sorry.
Kyle, you need to end this podcast before our song playing that, like, whistle thing. Like the... Yeah.
Can you whistle?
What?
Can you whistle?
You're asking me if I can personally whistle.
I don't know if I've ever heard you whistle.
I don't know if it's podcast appropriate. I can whistle, not very well.
Oh, okay.
One tone. Okay. I can't move mine.
One...
See. All right. Okay.
Well, Kara, we had to. So if you could let the Hoffens know to stay uncool.
Stay uncool.
There we go.
And may the odds be ever in your favor.
Yes. Good.
Brian, do you want to do more of the voice of
Effie? No, that's okay.
Effie, no, you got your.
I kind of, my throat's sore from just trying that one, so.
Sex of things, so thank you. I believe.